In that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any influence in goodness, nor is there any of their influence in goodness. There is no predominance of the influence of time. So what to speak of the illusory external energy? It cannot enter that region. Without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. Okay, translation. I kind of broke it down here in my analytical mind, German mentality. In that personal abode of the Lord, one, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail. Two, nor is there any other influence in goodness. Three, there is no predominance of the influence of time. Four, so what to speak of the illusory external energy? It cannot enter that region. Five, without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. And I kind of couldn't, it's a big purport. Took a long time to try and, you know, break it up, analyze it, look at it, understand the content, take it to heart. And I didn't get down to the last part here. I don't know if Prabhupada was going to talk about this interesting thing about the demigods and the demons both worship the Lord as devotees. Because it's kind of strange that we'd be talking about demons, demons in Vaikuntha, you know. I guess maybe it kind of falls in this category of the lion lays down with the lamb, because the lion has this kind of demoniac nature of, you know, tearing people's intestines out and eating them. So I guess I'm not sure what he does in Vaikuntha. Maybe he has macaroni or something. Yeah. So probably we'll talk about all these. And looking at the kind of perspective, of course, we had Maharaj Pariksit's questions in the last chapter, which are kind of like, you know, the good questions for our life. Well, we need to ask the same questions, pretty much. And his first question is, how does the spirit soul, which is pure, get entangled? And so then, of course, that's been answered by Sukadeva Goswami in the first, I think, four verses. And he said it's because the, you know, living entity has this desire. It's not an accident. It's actually very quite, you know, quite determined desire, quite a determined desire, obstinate, childish, you know, demand, tantrum level. Okay, so then Krishna arranges this situation to calm down our tantrum, and he makes it seem real like that to us, you know. So then how do we get out of all these things? Well, we get out of these things by Vishnu Darshan, by actually having the association of Vishnu, by experiencing his association. Krishna Surya Sam, Maya Hayan Bakar, Yahan Krishna Tahan Nahi Mayar Radhikar. So that's going to be described now, how Lord Brahma got the darshan of Vishnu. So at first the material circumstances are described, Sambandha, Abhideya, then Prayojana. So Sambandha, he's in Maya to start with, just like Arjuna's in Maya, the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He wants to, you know, show off in front of Draupadi and, you know, conquer all these guys and take their helmets back to her at the end of the day and toss them at her feet, and she'll tie up her hair and say, "Thank you, Arjuna," you know. And it was his brothers to be, you know, also appreciating what he did for Yudhisthira. So in the beginning, he has this kind of bodily concept of competition, and he's not seeing the bigger picture. He's only seeing his satisfaction, and which is quite justified in terms of anything material. But then Krishna acts as Diksha Guru, Madan Mohan, and takes him right in front of the Bhishma and Drona and tries to get him free from this attachment to Madan, Cupid, in the form of Draupadi. And this ideas, and he does it. He shakes him up, and then Arjuna begins to see the deficiencies of material life. So understanding how Lord Brahma, he's appreciating the deficiencies of material life also. When Maitreya Muni describes this again in the fourth canto to Vidura, he'll also describe the same waking up process of Brahma. Of course, we all probably all experience this, unless they're some people here in the mode of pure goodness. Myself, when I wake up, I have the if I'm doing it properly, I have the alarm clock across the room and try to get up at 1:15, you know, and I do it pretty regularly because it's such a wonderful time, so peaceful. So the old alarm clock goes off there, and I have no intelligence, but like, you know, I got to get the alarm turned off before the neighbors come and kill me. So I get up and move across the room to the light switch, and I make sure there's nothing in the way the night before to fall over. And then turn the light switch off, and you can on, and you can see the clock there. And you get these little simple instructions to your mind. Don't turn off the alarm until the light's on. Okay. Then right by the clock is a glass of water, a Maha Prasad. And you're supposed to drink it. So you drink it. So your mind might say, I want to drink it. But your intelligence says, drink it. Okay. So your mind is weak and befuddled anyway, you know. And so drink the whole thing and then go wash the hands, everything else, and come and sit down. I want to lie down. You can't, you know. So sit up. Okay. Chant. And within a very short time, the body is hydrated and you're going pretty well, unless you're like so, you know, so much exhausted from eating pizza and ice cream the night before. You know? So this kind of Lord Brahma situation, the same thing, we understand. He's waking up, but he's way up on the lotus seat. And it's described that we also, you know, can be, by engaging in devotional service in the parampara, we can also be engaged the same way as Lord Brahma, situated on the lotus seat. You know? And then his alarm clock, he's already woke up, but so he goes down into the stem of the lotus, can't find his origin, and then he hears these syllables, ta-pa, which, of course, Mataji is explaining means, you know, heat up. Prabhupada says that devotional service means to accelerate the senses, because then when they speed up, when they're, you know, moving and clear, then we can see ourselves. And that's all we have to do. We don't have to do anything else. Anicca Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kamunaya Shravanadi Chuchita Kadaje Udaya. The love of God's an eternal perfection of the soul. As soon as we wake up, automatically it's there. So we just got to clean the mirror up, and then we can start acting according to our nature, you know, if we want to. You know. So then Brahma is doing tapasya, and it's describing how, you know, how that tapas, that sound, the tapas sound, has to come from the right source. You know? Otherwise, we can get it. And people were mentioning this, I think it was yesterday, Prabhuji was mentioning the point that, Govindadat, that we can get maybe some temporary effect. You know, like there's some very, very famous kirtan leaders, you know, kirtan leaders now, not to mention any name. But they're very famous with their very mellow and, you know, long deep kirtans of Shiva, Jesus, Krishna, you know, like that. And so people, they, oh, it was so great, Prabhu, you know, I was in ecstasy, you know. And so it's a temporary celestial sense gratification. And if you look at it, what's happening is your senses become peaceful, you know, relatively speaking, and then maybe some kind of celestial gratification, you know. Passion and ignorance on a celestial level. Huh? So Prabhupada says one in the purport, he said that one has to be intelligent enough to distinguish who's a bona fide guru. You know? So we have to at least be able to figure out that. You know? We can see the moon. Everybody can see the moon, but we want to see the details. So everybody knows God. Everybody knows Krishna. But what's my relationship with him? Will I become God? You know? And if I'm a servant of a God, well, what's my service? You know, I can work for some company and get all absorbed. I can work for Hewlett Packard or Micron, or I can become a special service agent for the U.S. government and go to foreign countries and kill people, you know, for my government. All these exciting storylines are being generated by Maya, you know. But yeah, we need it just as an exciting storyline for our own life. Otherwise, how can we stick with it? So what's my service? What's my detail here? You know, please can I get it? So for that, we realize, okay, a telescope would be good. So we get maybe like a, you know, 40-power telescope with a 3-power finder scope on the side, because if you look straight through the 40-power telescope, it's so fine, you'll never get on the moon or the star, Venus. So I looked at the little finder telescope, which closes you in closer. Like it's like Bartman of Padarsika Guru. You get in the real telescope, which probably has a compound lens. The first lens, this lens is focused on the second lens. The second lens is focused on the third lens. That's focused on the fourth lens. If they're all lined up and focused, then you can see the moon. But with great detail. It's not like you're seeing a pink crocodile, you know, now. No, you're seeing the same thing. You know, yeah, there's the test, you know. Guru doesn't give you something different, no? He gives you the same thing, you know. But he gives it like from a, more details, more perspective like that. Yeah. So it's being discussed before that Prabhupada's making this lot of emphasis to acharyas. Yes, too. Very long purports here. Seems the acharyas really were taking a lot of interest in these verses. And then Prabhupada gives a description that we have to be able to discriminate who's a proper guru, which telescope is a good telescope, bona fide telescope. And then we have to, or else he says, if somehow or other we're just fortunate. So maybe that's our situation in Paschacha Desha. We're just fortunate, you know, to have got Prabhupada. Reading Tamal Krishnamurti's book that was published, you know, posthumously for his thesis, there's a lot of very, very analytical analysis and tremendous literature review, probably with the help of some assistants also. And one of the things they came up with is that Prabhupada mentions guru, I think it was 89% more than the previous acharyas. Interesting. And his purports and so on, he mentions guru like 89% more, which basically puts up to 90% more, you know, almost twice as much. You know? So that doesn't seem too surprising since we have no cultural assets, you know, very little, maybe with Christianity and things like that. We do have some, you know, other sources that we've been taught to use rational thought processes very well, like Sankhya and those kind of things. We've been raised in good use of grammar, good use of arithmetic thinking, algebra, you know, things like that. You know? And so we have some assets, but compared to the people that Sukadeva Goswami is talking to in Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda, we haven't got much cultural asset. So it doesn't seem too surprising then that Prabhupada is emphasizing guru because he is our asset. So somehow or other, if we get in his orbit and then he impresses us with how important and pure he is, and then lets us take a look at it from a purified position, then we got some opportunity like that. So it's like taking us over and saying, look at the telescope. Look at it. Here, come here. I don't want to. You'll see something really interesting. There's some pretty girls across the street. There's some handsome guys. There's a really nice-looking dog with a jewel collar. Oh, really? Take some prasadam. Look at the beautiful deities. You know, see the pretty dresses on the deities. Wow, yeah. See the fun activities. You know. Okay. And then we begin to appreciate Guru, Prabhupada. So, tapa, Guru, and then Brahma is doing all these things. Shinvatam swakata Krishna, punya shravana kirtanaha, kridiyantastohi abhadrani, vidunoti suhitsatam. Krishna purifies the heart when we're sincere in this hearing and chanting. So we're engaged in tapa, and not silent meditation. They emphasize this, you know. If Brahma was chanting some Vishnu mantra or something like that, or the pranava om, realization of the personal form of Vishnu, you know? And then because of that, you know, then Krishna purifies the heart, and so then Brahma began to be able to see, you know, we have Goloka Darshan, or as I understand, what he's seeing actually here is Mahavishnu Loka, something like that, or it appears like Vaikuntha, because that's the whole emphasis as we're reading of Vidura's discussion with Maitreya, because Vidura wanted to hear what Uddhava heard when Maitreya was there at Krishna's departure. And sages of Naimisharanya also want to hear about this, because it appears that Krishna discussed something higher than Brahma's darshan. Brahma only got a darshan of the Supreme Lord as the creator of the universe, pretty much. And the Vaikuntha plan is full of variety and enjoyment, you know. And it seems like it's more than Mahavishnu Loka, but I think it's what it describes one time, you know. But mostly Vaikuntha, forearmed, and everybody in awe and reverence of Srimad Narayan. So what Uddhava heard was the pastimes in Dwarka and things like that, and Krishna explained that these are not like a material compensation for lusty people, that these pastimes are actually superior, you know. And so what is the supreme abode? Okay, so now we're coming, this verse pretty much is the first verse, which is describing the Lord's abode. And like Prabhu was saying, a long purport, so a lot of concern that these things are clear, you know, to us. Then after this, we'll see that actually the purports are pretty short, you know, but it's describing all the more personal features and the airplanes and the complexions and all these kind of things. So one thought comes up that actually until we're in Shuddha Sattva, you know, all these stories about Krishna and so on are pretty much going to be fairy tales to us, you know, Harry Potter and these kind of things. And we won't really appreciate them until we're in Shuddha Sattva. And then we can begin to appreciate that the whole difference here is not to enjoy the story, not to enjoy the fairyland, but to try to serve the tale, to serve the fairyland. You know? Because Vaikuntha is like an amusement park which is only half constructed like that. That's what it feels like. We haven't really begun the fun. We get a few amusement things here going, you know, Radha and Krishna and the gopis and, wow, a few fun things, but we haven't really started yet getting the whole thing built. So constructing Goloka, constructing Vrindavan, you know, that's the job, how to participate with that construction. Okay, so Prabhupada's purport. That's our perspective here. Trying to give our idea, got our mind in right shape. Number six, the kingdom of God or the atmosphere of the Vaikuntha nature, which is called Tripad Vibhuti. Now, the Vaikuntha nature, which is called Tripad Vibhuti, is three times bigger than the material universes and is described here as also in the Bhagavad Gita in a nutshell. This universe, containing billions of stars and planets, is one of the billions of such universes clustered together within the compass of the Mahat Tattva. And all these millions and billions of universes combined together constitute only one-fourth of the magnitude of the whole creation of the Lord. So probably in the beginning, you seem to be trying to create some real perspective, you know, trying to see the moon through the trees. You can appreciate how far away the moon is if you see it through some distant trees, you know. So same way describing the comparison of the spiritual world, which Brahman is seeing in comparison to our world, he's giving some contrast. Okay, number seven. There is the spiritual sky also. Beyond this sky are the spiritual planets under the names of Vaikuntha, and all of them constitute three-fourths of the entire creation of the Lord. God's creations are always innumerable. Even the leaves of a tree cannot be counted by a man, nor can the hairs on his head. However, foolish men are puffed up with the idea of becoming God himself, though unable to create a hair of their own body. So we can't, actually I read one place a long time ago, the average person, the average man is 10,000 hairs on his head. Anyway, counting them, this is just nice analogies, you know, trying to count the hairs on your head, and if you're one off, you can't go back to Godhead. Even five off, we'll give some slack here, you know. And so still people have this idea of becoming God. I was talking to Gayatri Das yesterday about the preaching here. He's a very older devotee here, and a very kind of successful business guy working in real estate. I'm a former big Sankirtan leader and everything else here, you know, in Tennessee. And he said he had a yoga program they ran for about a few years here. And so one time this kind of big heavy kind of guy, looked maybe like he was into yoga and stuff, like somehow or other came in. He was sitting there doing the lecture. And he raised his hand right up during the lecture, and Gayatri said, "Yeah, what is it? What is it?" And the guy said, "Can I become God?" You know. He said he thought about it for a couple of seconds, and he said, "Well, you know, I guess there's no reason why you can't try, but why don't you get back to us after a while and tell us how it's going?" And so everybody, even he, you know, laughed at it. Because, yeah, you get a little perspective and remember even a little bit what God is supposed to be, and the whole effort seems to have its like challenges to it, you know. Yeah. Then after that, of course, there's a lot of work to do. If you become God, Okay. Number, what's the next slide? Number 8. Man may discover so many wonderful vehicles of journey, but even if he reaches the moon by as much advertised spacecraft, and of course this is before we went to the moon, this was in, I probably wrote this, he cannot remain there. The same man, therefore, you know, without being puffed up as if he were the god of the universe, abides by the instructions of the Vedic literature, the easiest way to acquire knowledge in transcendence. The easiest way. Okay, next slide. So, let us, through the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, let us know, through the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, the nature and constitution of the transcendental world beyond the material sky. And so we have here our little picture of, I guess it's a Saturn III C, and there's one of the astronauts on the moon. Of course, a little controversial about the whether they went there with that first flight or not, whether they were off in the desert in Arizona like that. Yeah. And anyway, very, very weird vehicles of exploration. The Saturn IIIC, when they built the thing, it has three pods, had three pods, and I think each one produced it 250,000 pounds of thrust. So you can imagine getting into your little Volkswagen or even your Lamborghini or something. I don't know how many pounds of thrust it has, but probably it's nothing anywhere is even insignificant compared to 200,000 pounds of thrust. 200,000 pounds of thrust. Okay. Now there's three pods like that. So altogether the thing has 750,000 pounds of thrust. As I remember it, the whole thing is about 20 stories tall. And what we're looking at in the picture, if you can see it here, is a 20-story tall office building being lifted vertically into space to try to achieve an escape velocity, which I forgot what it is, you know, like that, orbital velocity. And way at the teeny, teeny top here, remember 20 stories here, divided in half, you've got 10 stories. Divide the top half, and you've got 5 stories. Divide that, you're 2.5. Way in the teeny, teeny story in the top penthouse are 7 astronauts strapped on their back on cushioned tables. And finally, one of them says, you know, 3, 2, 1, 0, and pushes the button. And 750,000 pounds of high octane fuel ignite and blast these guys vertically into outer space. You know, and of course we all know that one time it blasted them into pieces so small there wasn't anything left bigger than a 7-inch piece of bone. You know? So it probably talks about much advertised, imaginary trips to the moon and these kind of things. And even still it seems way, way beyond. Even science fiction, which has some kind of maybe, you know, more plausible approaches to these things, you know, suggestions. The actual fact of how they are still accomplishing these things seems to be way, way behind anything of, you know, approaching what is even imaginable. So here we are, we're probably trying to emphasize that we have a long way before we're going to get to the spiritual world, whether by Vaikuntha planets or anything else. And of course, this is just the second canto. So it's assumed that people are going through this systematically, reading one canto after another. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we're already reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're experiencing some of the mellows and sentiments of the spiritual world sometimes during intense kirtans. You know? So we have to understand that actually these chapters and stuff are very simple. It's very simple ideas, really, because it's only the second canto. It's just, you know, two cantos beyond Bhagavad Gita, like that, and the Upanishads. Okay, next slide, number 10. In that sky, the material qualities, especially the modes of ignorance and passion, are completely absent. Okay, so that's the basic principle here now. The mode of ignorance influences a living entity to the habit of lust and hankering. So we become lusty. You know, we're looking at some object of gratification, money, food, and what happens, you know? The senses accumulate, like rust. The senses accumulate the energy. The senses are supposed to see it, smell it, taste it and pass that right onto the mind. The mind is supposed to pass it onto the heart. The heart is supposed to pass it onto the super soul. So our senses are supposed to be transparent by media. But it doesn't happen when they become the objects of worship and we try to use the sensuous experiences to gratify the senses, you know, try to make them the enjoyers. Then we see, like in the picture, we're trying to stuff in this money with our fork, eat it, becoming obese and can't breathe, and, you know, agitation of all kinds, ungratified, less satisfaction than somebody who's just simply a fool, you know. Yeah. So lust creates hankering, you know, ignorance and passion. You know? And this means that in the Vaikunthas, Prabhupada says, Vaikuntha Lokas, the living entities are free from these two things, because there's no ignorance and passion, then there's no lust and hankering. My goodness, what do they do then? As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, in the Brahma-Bhuta stage of life, one becomes free from hankering and lamentation. Next slide. Yeah. Brahma-Bhuta parasanatma na sochati na kankshati samasaravesha bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Yeah, then we can get bhakti when we actually come to this Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then Prabhupada says, therefore, the conclusion is that the inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planet are all Brahma-Bhuta living entities, as distinguished from the mundane creatures who are all compact in hankering and lamentation. Wow, compact. Yeah, pushed up together in hankering and lamentation. All day long, that's why we go to work, that's why we do everything. It's just if our intelligence is actually usually, you know, we're absorbed in the senses, the sense objects. Sometimes we come back and are aware of those things. That's what Buddha is suggesting. Come back to your intelligence. But usually our intelligence is working as a background platform. And if we get a chance to come back and look at it, we usually see it's full of these things, hankering and lamentation, fear, anxiety. And that's why we do everything, you know, in terms of work or keep our family relations. Okay, number 12. When one is not in the mode of ignorance and passion, one is supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness in the material world. Goodness in the material world also at times becomes contaminated by touches of the modes of passion and ignorance. So that's what it says. It says, in the translation, it says, there's no passion or ignorance, nor their influence on the mode of goodness. So nothing is bad about the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is good. But in the material world, it's usually, Paul says, usually, what you know, 99.99999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 And if we get ourselves into shuddha-sattva by extreme austerities and everything else, can we be completely free from passion and ignorance? Of course, we're still in the material world. We're still seeing ourselves in the mirror, but now the mirror is an accurate reflection of Vaikuntha. So all we have to do is turn around and get out of the mirror and go back to Godhead. But Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatma, it's a stage where we can get bhakti. In Vaikuntha, it is unalloyed goodness only, you know, Prabhupada says. Okay, 13. The whole situation is one of freedom from the illusory manifestation of the external energy. Okay. So now we talked about the sattva, the Raja and Tamas not being there. The sattva is pure sattva. And then also it said there was no external energy. The whole situation there is one of freedom from the external, from the illusory manifestation of the external energy. Although illusory energy is also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, illusory energy is differentiated from the Lord. The illusory energy is not, however, false, as claimed by the monist philosophers. So three things. It's Krishna's energy, but it's a separated energy. But it's not so separated that it doesn't have a reality to it. And it's not false. The rope accepted as a snake may be an illusion to a particular person, but the rope is a fact, and the snake is also a fact. Okay, number 14. There we go. Yeah. The illusion of water, the illusion of water on the hot desert may be illusion for the ignorant animal searching for water in the desert, but the desert and water are actual facts. So this is interesting because that means that we're never confronted with anything which is false. It's quite a realization. Everything we're confronted with, you know, through our senses, if we're focusing on our senses, is not false, okay? And everything we're confronted with in our thoughts, our impressions, our desires, you know, our hankerings, also is not false, you know? But the illusion comes when we try to use it improperly, you know? Even the desires, everything else of the mind are coming, you know? The only thing is we just have to put them in the proper perspective. And then, okay, then our desires are good. Our passions and nature and attractions are good. You know, we just have to learn to put them in the proper perspective. Okay, go down here. Therefore, number 15 Prabhupada says, the material creation of the Lord may be an illusion for the non-devotee, you know, but to a devotee, even the material creation of the Lord is a fact as the manifestation of his external energy. So the prison is okay if you're a psychologist, a prison guard, or a prisoner trying to reform himself. The prison is wonderful. You know, at the right time, in the right place, in the right circumstances, it's the best place and state to be like that. But this energy of the Lord is not all. The Lord has his internal energy also, which has another creation known to be the Vaikuntha Lokas, where there is no ignorance, no passion, no illusion, and no past and no present. Huh? Wait a second. Oh, no illusion? Wait a second now. No past and no present. That's kind of interesting. It seems like no past and no future. Okay. Next slide. Yeah. With a poor fund of knowledge, one may be unable to understand the existence of such things as the Vaikuntha atmosphere. But that does not nullify its existence. You know, the spacecraft cannot reach these planets. That spacecraft cannot reach these planets does not mean that there is no such planets, that there are no such planets. For they are described in revealed scriptures. And here we have a picture of one of these space guys coming back. I think it was one of the first ones here. Just the first, was it one? Smaller one like that. See how ridiculous it is, this tiny little mechanical device. You're trying to understand what's going on. Try to go to space. It's like a bunch of bacteria trying to build a spacecraft to go from the elbow to the face or something like that. They don't want to have to go up under the sleeve and across the armpit. So they're trying to build a spacecraft, and the bacteria are going to blast off on our joyride and hit the earlobe and try and, you know, feast on some earwax. Okay, next slide here for the cockroaches. As quoted by Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī. Now Prabhupāda will go into a series about I think three different or four citations which talk all about the actual nature of the spiritual world from the Shastras, which we're talking about, to confirm it. As quoted by Jīva Gosvāmī, as quoted by Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, we can know from the Narada Pancharatra that the transcendental world or Vaikuntha atmosphere is enriched with transcendental qualities. These transcendental qualities, as revealed through devotional service of the Lord, are distinct from the mundane qualities of ignorance, passion, and goodness. Such qualities are not attainable by the non-devotee class of men. And next slide. In the Padma Purana, okay, so the second citation, Uttarakhanda, it is stated that beyond the 1/4 part of God's creation is the 3/4 manifestation. The marginal line between the material manifestation and the spiritual manifestation is the Viraja River, which I think is the same as the causal ocean. And beyond the Viraja, which is a transcendental current flowing from the perspiration of the body of the Lord, there is the three-fourths manifestation of God's creation. This part is eternal, everlasting, without deterioration, and unlimited, and it contains the highest perfectional stage of living conditions. So all these, again, are very kind of like Upanishadic. They're not describing the details because you can't understand them until we give up any kind of, you know, passionate or ignorant, you know, conceptions of life. 19. The fourth and third and fourth citations. In the Sankhya Kaumudi, it is stated that unalloyed goodness or transcendence is just opposite to the material modes. All living entities are eternally associated without any break. Okay, so here we have all these breaks. You grow up and you have friends when you're children. I wonder, right down my street, there was this Catholic family, and there was, David Nichols, Stevie Nichols, and I think Mark. Mark was the middle one, I think. And we used to play all the time together. And Tom Plant was up the street, little father. So we used to all play together intensely with baseball and sports after school, and, you know, until it was cold at night and go home in the dark. And so the whole thing now, I started to talk about it, Arcadia, California, you know. It was such an incredible scene, and you think about it, for enjoyment in many ways. Of course, there's a lot of suffering, too. And suffering was also quite intense because it was childish. You know? So where are all those associates now? Prabhupada says here, all living entities there are eternally associated without any break. And the Lord is the chief and prime entity. Yeah. In the Agama Puranas also, fourth citation, the transcendental abode is described as follows. The associated members are free to go everywhere within the creation of the Lord, and there is no limit to such creation, particularly in the region of the three-fourths magnitude. Since the nature of that region is unlimited, there is no history of such association, nor is there end of it. So here we have, I was thinking about this, what I understand Bob is saying is the idea is that here we're looking at everybody, like maybe Narahari is thinking about his associates in Hawaii and when he came there and whatever happened. And I'm thinking about, like I mentioned, in Southern California, if I meet somebody, you know, who was from there and that we grew up together and we just went to the same primary school, elementary school, and maybe went, wow, you know. And so we all have, again, in our subconscious, maybe it's more conscious other times, this whole, you know, perspective, history of our associations. But in the spiritual world, there's no history of associations. what an incredible thing. Everything is the present moment, and we'll go on here, and I think Prabhupada will bring it out in the next slide like that. Number 20. The conclusion may be drawn that because of the complete absence of the mundane qualities of ignorance and passion, there is no question of creation annihilation. In the material world, everything is created and everything is annihilated. And the duration of life between the creation and annihilation is temporary. You know? So even when it was free, it's not creation and maintenance, it has that feeling of being created at some time and going to be destroyed at some time. In the transcendental realm, there is no creation and no destruction, and therefore the duration of life is eternally unlimited. Next slide. In other words, so Prabhupada's putting it from another perspective again. Everything in the transcendental world is everlasting, full of knowledge and bliss, without deterioration. Since there is no deterioration, there is no past, present, and future in the estimation of time. So if there is no present, how could it exist? Yeah, no. There is a present there, but not in the estimation of time. And so past and future, yeah, there's a feeling that this moment, this meeting, Radha and Krishna get a chance to meet, but there's this feeling, oh, we're going to be separated. But how much is that feeling? Is it such a strong feeling that's going to make the present moment miserable? No. It's a feeling which increases the tastefulness of the present moment. So there's enough feeling of separation in the meeting to increase the intensity and the beauty and the perspective of the present moment. So all that's happening is everybody is just in the present moment eternally modulating the thing, improving it, drawing a circle on the paper, then within that drawing a square, within that drawing another circle, and within that drawing a triangle. Yeah. And so it's the same piece of paper, the same within the square, but everything is becoming more and more focused, more and more beautiful, more intense, and it's changing. So it's kind of hard to see. In some ways, when I say this, I see how addicted I am to linear time. I have to have a time which is created and is destroyed to actually situate myself in the present moment and have a good time like that. But in the spiritual world, everything is there simultaneously, and all we're doing is improving it. Okay. It is clearly stated in this verse that the influence of time is conspicuous by its absence. That's interesting. So maybe the material nature is also there, but how is it there? It's there by not being there. So maybe the material nature is necessary. It gives a perspective on things. So maybe that's why there exists a material world that we can fall into. The whole material existence is manifested by actions and reactions of elements, which make the influence of time prominent in the matter of past, present, and future. And the last slide. No, two more. Number 22. There are no such actions or reactions of cause and effect there. Pro, the cycle of birth, growth, existence, transformations, deterioration, and annihilation, the six material changes, are not existent there. It is the unalloyed manifestation of the energy of the Lord without illusion as experienced here in the material world. And last slide, 23. The whole Vaikuntha existence proclaims that everyone there is a follower of the Lord. The Lord is the chief leader there without any competition for leadership, and the people in general are all followers of the Lord. So I guess now Prabhupada's touching on this point about the demons and the surasuras. They both worship him. So I guess they were formerly asuras, You know, maybe something in me is like Abhimanyu. He's kind of like Asura because he's opposed to Krishna associating with Radha. You know, somehow or other, it says the whole Vaikuntha atmosphere proclaims that everyone there is a follower of the Lord. So how is Abhimanyu a follower of Krishna if he's opposed to Radharani's association with him? The Lord is the chief leader without any competition for leadership, and the people in general are all followers of the Lord. It is confirmed in the Vedas, therefore, that the Lord is the chief leader and all other living entities are subordinate to him, for only the Lord satisfies all the needs of all other living entities. And of course, that is Nityo Nichanam, Chetanas, Chitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yobididati Kaman. Like that. Okay, and the last slide. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai, Haribo. Such a big purport. So any comments? Anybody?
Jai Maharaj. That was a wonderful class.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my obeisances.
Srila Prabhupada. Who is this?
This is Yuga Rasa.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you how we should understand that demons and demigods worshipping Lord in Vaikuntha planets?
Yeah, that's what I said when it first came up. I have an echo of somebody's speakers. Yeah.
Yugaras, can you meet?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was mentioning. It was also shocking to me. I remember that as being shocking, and I read it today. I read the purport. Yeah, because how can there be like asuras in the spiritual world? You know? And so the very, very last part of the purport, then, that seems to be what Prabhupada is touching on, that one, that everybody acknowledges his superiority. And that's what I was trying to think about. I was thinking, well, again, we know about Abhimanyu, you know. Abhimanyu. And also in the spiritual world, it says there are hints. hints of demons like that in Goloka, not in Gokula, no. In Gokula there are demons running around, asuras, but in Goloka there are only rumors of the demons like that and so on. You know? And so it seems that there's some kind, and then it says that it's conspicuous by its absence. And that's how the material energy is there. So that brings to this thought that, you know, because it's all there, and the material world is a part of Vaikuntha. There's nothing outside of Vaikuntha. It's just like in anybody's city, we're going to find a city prison. Yes, you know, nice lecturing point. You ask somebody where is the jail, municipal jail in Santiago, and most people don't know, but a couple of people will know, and they'll say, "Is it? Oh yeah, no, it's over there." You know, so it's like that. You know, in Vaikuntha, they know there's a Maya, there's the Bahiranga Shakti, but most people haven't gone there. They don't know what it is. And the others, they know it. They kind of think, where is it? Over there? Is here or there? You know, like that. You know? So these asuric things exist, but in that perspective, they all acknowledge the superiority of the Lord. And so maybe again, it's the asuric things there, they don't see the Lord, but they acknowledge him as the time factor. So from that perspective, everybody can see, they can see the material world, they can see what's going on, and they can see that all the demons are actually worshiping Krishna. But they're worshiping him, of course, you know, for the time factor. For those who are more developed and more subtle, maybe even more subtle means, you know, subtle acknowledgments of the superiority of the Lord. So that's what I would understand.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Just to commiserate with you, Maharaj, I had the same perplexity because I read sort of took a really quick look at the translation purport, and I was sort of wondering the same thing, especially because it's right there in the translation. I was saying, boy, I hope Prabhupada's going to explain what he meant by that. And he sort of touched upon it, but didn't go into it too deeply. And I was thinking that, you know, I mean, there are examples in Shastras of those who were demons for whatever karmic reasons, like Vitrasura, for example, who was ultimately in his heart a great devotee, and even all demons, even, you know, Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, I mean, deep down in the heart, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Shajikabunoi Shavananda Shitichitikuri Utoi, that everyone is a devotee. So it says worshiping as devotees. Anyway, so my thought is that, you know, even the demons, the worst of demons, eventually worship Krishna. They surrender as devotees. Sooner or later, that's going to precipitate out. Otherwise, I guess we could say that the material world didn't fulfill its function. I mean, the function of the material world is to somehow reform all of us so that we give up that sort of very esoteric, difficult to understand reason that we wanted to turn away from Krishna and see what it's like to be God. So he made this place that would ultimately frustrate us. And ultimately everyone, even the greatest of all demons, eventually give it up and go back and worship Krishna in Vaikuntha. Anyway, that was my thought.
It's interesting because, you know, we're not in the level of relishing the spacecraft. You know, kind of, I was thinking, oh, these airplanes, you know, let me ride one and enjoy myself, you know, like that. But that's the whole point. These are not for any our enjoyment, you know. And so just like we're talking about it now, it's just to get the basic fundamental esoteric perspective of the thing down is like an amazing accomplishment, you know, and to understand how everything is there. The whole demoniac thing is there, you know, and it's all for Krishna's worship. And then of course the material world falls in line. Everything becomes clear, you know, why it exists. It's one aspect of worshiping Krishna from that point of view.
We have a
that's consistent with what Krishna says, Mamavart Manavart Tante Manusyam Partha Sarvasha, that all men follow my path in all respects. That, you know, everyone is chasing after Krishna's we're pursuing Krishna's energies, but eventually, you know, we're either heading towards Krishna or away from Krishna, but eventually it will all lead back to Krishna.
Yeah, all back to the internal potency.
Yes.
Yeah.
All back to Vaikuntha, all back to home.
Who helped Krishna the most in accomplishing his mission of incarnation when he came? Who gave him the most help?
Prabhupada.
No, I mean, when he was here 5,000 years ago, he had to annihilate all these guys. Who helped him the most to annihilate all those people?
Lord Balaram.
Some people say Arjuna, some say Balaram. I would say Duryodhana. Right? Duryodhana got them all in one place at one time. So Krishna could finish off his whole mission of incarnation in 18 days. Yeah, but it was pratikulyena. It wasn't anukulyena. It was with the conscious intention to hurt Krishna that Duryodhana did it, you know? But like you're saying, everybody's following his path. Duryodhana thought he was being such a big naughty boy. What was he doing? He was helping Krishna fulfill everything he wanted to do. He got everybody in one place at one time, and Krishna could wipe them all out in 18 days. Jai, thank you.
Regarding the Viroja, I think we hit a point where we were a little confused on that one. My understanding, for its worth, of Viroja is that's the sort of cusp. It's the river that flows, you know, when we say going from the bottom up, there's, you know, Patala Loka, Borloka, Svarga Loka, then the planets of the rishis, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and then Brahmaloka, and then, which is the highest in this material world, and then beyond that is the Viroja, which is the river that flows between the material and spiritual. And as one crosses over the Viroja, then he enters into the Paravyoma, which is the Brahman. And then, of course, beyond that is the Vaikuntha planets.
You know, recently, as I was saying, I noticed that too, because then recently, as remembering, Prabhupada says, Viraja, the Viraja, or causal ocean. And so he equates those two right there. Yeah, it's right there. Yeah, it's the boundary between material and spiritual. It's kind of like there's no causes in the spiritual world. Everything is causeless. Our love for Krishna, Krishna's love for us. But then you get the causal ocean, or the Viraja. And probably, I remember he was saying that it's the same thing. I remember just reading one time. Because like you're saying, it was confusing, you know. All this cosmology. Boy, the fifth canto starts to get... We're going through it many times now. It's starting to get clear, especially with Sadaputta's movie, Mysteries of the Sacred Universe. And it's Bhakti Bhai Bhava program. It's just, we're realizing it's mandatory. You know, everybody watched that movie. He kind of organizes it all in nice, simple, clear graphics, and all this stuff becomes... A lot of the stuff becomes very clear then, you know, when it's suggested.
What movie?
He did his book. Sadaputta did his book, Mysteries of the Sacred Universe, but he also did a movie then, like which illustrates the points of how the sun can be going backwards and forwards and all this kind of stuff like that. And it's on the YouTube, Mysteries of the Sacred Universe, and of course you could even download it from there. It's about 45 minutes, and then it makes, you know, it's just, and the book, it goes into a lot more details in the mathematics and stuff, but the movie is kind of nice level, you know, nice practical level of understanding what the Bhagavatam is talking about.
Maharaj, there's this.
Can I interrupt just for a second? Because Damayanti Mataji had another question, but please, Madan Mohan, if you could you just wait for me to do Mother Damayanti's question?
Certainly.
I'm sorry. Okay. Please don't lose your train of thought. Damayanti, do you want to ask this, or should I just read it for you?
Please read, because I don't have headset on.
Okay. In the Brahma Samhita, the form of Lord Krishna and Radha and the gopis are mentioned. Also, Lord Brahma gets realization that he is a maidservant of Sri Radha and Krishna. So why then Srimad Bhagavatam gives only Vaikuntha darshan?
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know, maybe later civilization. I don't know. I just don't know. You know, different day when he woke up, maybe. I mean, he woke up on different days and had different kinds of experiences. But I don't know specifically, you know.
Madan Mohan Prabhu, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Please forgive me.
Okay. This verse is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the same one that we're on today. And its translation explains, it's quite a bit different. It's in Majjalila chapter 20, where he's talking to Sanatana Goswami about the science of the Absolute Truth. And it's text 270. Its translation reads like this. In the spiritual world, there's neither the mode of passion nor neither the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, nor a mixture of both. There is unadulterated goodness, the influence of time or Maya itself, nor the influence. Only the pure devotees of the Lord, who are worshipped both by the demigods and the demons, reside in the spiritual world as the Lord's associates. So there it gives a whole different idea about being worshipped by the demons and the devotees. It says, the way the sentence reads, only the pure devotees of the Lord who are worshipped. So the pure devotees of the Lord are worshipped by both the demigods and the demons, reside in the spiritual world as the Lord's associates. So
that matches up with the dira dira jana priyo, that both the six Goswamis were dear to both the suras and the asuras, the diras and the diras.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's a lot easier than understanding demons in Vaikuntha. Here it's that the pure devotees are in Vaikuntha, and they're worshipped by the... And we can see that pretty much by how Prabhupada, or as you're pointing out, the Dira Dira, the six Goswamis. Thank you.
You got it. Time for a question from me?
It's very, very nice. These purports are... That's the whole point. You see, some of these texts, you can cover like, you know, three or four in one day. You know, the actual purports is basically like a little narrative. And some of these, like I think it was yesterday, Govinda, he was mentioning the same thing. And some of these purports would take like, you know, two or three days. They're so intense like that. We start getting cross references from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and stuff. Wow. Oh, yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. I always feel anxious because my question's usually way off. Doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking. Anyway. One of the citations in the purport was from the Agama Puranas. I tell you, I have been so confused about what Nigama and Agama, I try and understand, and I cannot follow it. What is an Agama and what is a Nigama?
Well, you got to understand what are Sagamas. I'm joking. Yeah, I don't. Agama, Nigama, Sagama, like that. Yeah, I really don't know myself. When in doubt in situations like this, I turn to the my guru, the Wikipedia, and look it up there, and I try and look at the references they're giving and that kind of stuff, and then some ideas are there. You know? So on.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know the details of it. I remember one time I looked it up. The agamas, I think the agamas are more like tantras.
That's right. Yeah, that's why it gets so confusing, you know, because it's mixed up with other cultures and with shaktas, with all kinds of stuff. So
agamas are more for like how to do things and that kind of stuff. You know, practical activities and stuff, applications.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I guess we'll go ahead here, and we're going to cook Lord Nishimadeva's lunch. Any peas porridge? And iron his clothes.
Thank you, Maharaj. It was really, really good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Thank you.
Help! Help!